Blog Talk Radio.
If I knew then what I know now, no, I wouldn't change much of anything anyhow. It was 50-50, and I won the coin toss when you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz. When you danced with me at the Huntington's Waltz.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live. Our podcast is brought to you by Help for HD International on Blog Talk Radio and is made possible by Teva Pharmaceuticals and the Griffin Foundation. I'm your host, Sharon Thomason, and I am so excited to have Genevieve Patch with us on the show today. Genevieve is the amazing author of Help for HD's new book, I Fight for Understanding. She's both a nurse and a caregiver extraordinaire, and we are so blessed to have her here with us today. Genevieve is actually a pseudonym that our guest uses to protect the privacy of her family. I first met her on Facebook, and while I've never met her in person, I count her as one of my dearest friends. Welcome, Genevieve, and thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Sharon. I'm honored to be here.
Well, let's get started with a little bit of background about yourself and how Huntington's became such a big part of your life.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in California. And when I was 28, I moved to the state of Missouri with my husband and our two oldest children. We have three boys who are at risk, two that have tested positive and one that remains untested. And how Huntington's became such a big part of my life is after I had been married about a year, I was assigned a genetic documentary by my genetics class, and it happened to be the Venezuela Project on Huntington's disease. And I mentioned that to my husband, and he said, oh, my grandma died from that. And I said, well, your grandma just left. And so we watched this documentary, and I realized then, since this was in his family, that, you know, any children we had would be at risk for this. And so later, due to some cover up in the family, we did end up having children, and now we have children at risk, and his mom is currently dying in a nursing home. She's in the end stages of Huntington's disease, and my ex-husband as well has Huntington's disease, and so it has just become a huge part of my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just live and breathe it, don't you?
Actually, I do. I became very obsessed with knowing every little thing I could about the disease.
And I know one of the things that you've done is to read everything you could get your hands on about the disease.
Yes, that's correct. If you saw my library, you would probably laugh. It's quite the library.
Well, now, you have a book to add to that library called I Fight for Understanding. It's 31 Days of Coping with Huntington's Disease, and it's written primarily for caregivers. Tell us a little bit about how the book evolved.
Well, one of the things that I felt when I was a caregiver for Nana and had my ex-husband in my home and then a teenager at risk still at home, was I felt very overwhelmed with riding this roller coaster of a disease. And it seemed like my whole life just disappeared, and I didn't really have anyone to turn to. And there were social workers at the Center of Excellence, and there were friends online, but I just needed almost like a daily boost. And so when May became Huntington's Awareness Month, I thought, I am going to give back to the community that's helped me so much, and I'm going to help new caregivers and old caregivers feeling overwhelmed. And I thought, that's who needs the care, is the caregivers. So they do a thankless job, and I wanted to be supportive of everyone that's a caregiver.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier and how we really take care of ourselves last.
Exactly, and that's a huge need.
Yeah. It's that old metaphor for the airplane. You know, you put your own oxygen mask on first so that you can help the other passengers. It's the same thing with caregiving. You have to take care of yourself so that you can take care of other people.
Exactly.
So I know that you started this, I think, 2 years ago.
That's correct.
And each day you would post tips, and tell us about where you posted them and how you came up with the ideas for your posts.
Well, the first year I used the theme purple and blue. It's up to you, because purple and blue are the colors for HD and JHD. And so for the month of May, every day I would get online and I would post something. But then the following year, and I did that all 31 days of May, the following year, I really thought that I wanted to reach out and post for caregivers. I was noticing a lot of new caregivers coming in, and there were several sites that I belonged to. There was the Huntington's Caregiver site, there was the Huntington's Korea site, and there was the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly site. And then I joined help4hd.org and started posting in all of those and visiting with different caregivers and people with the illness on all of those sites.
And so you've developed a huge network within the community, even extending outside of the United States, right?
Yes, correct. I have a very good friend in Canada. I have a very good friend in Scotland, and I have a very good friend in Australia, who I speak with frequently.
And all of that has been through the connections on Facebook.
Yes, correct. I encourage any caregiver or recently diagnosed family to get online and just get on Facebook, search the word Huntington's disease, and join as many of those groups as they can.
That has been a real lifesaver for me. When I started my journey nearly 35 years ago, there wasn't anything like that.
And no, not at all.
Because the disease was so, I'm not going to say it was rare. I'm going to say it's rarely heard of, because I don't really think it's as rare as they say that it is. But because it was so rarely heard of, you know, it was very unusual to find anybody else in the community where you lived that knew anything about it. So when Facebook came along with its various sites, that was, oh my gosh, it was, I don't know. How did you feel about that when you found all of these sites with people who knew what you were talking about?
It was a relief. It was like joining a whole new family. There was this instant camaraderie and brotherhood, and it finally a place where I could go and go, is this normal? Am I normal? Is this what I'm supposed to be expecting? How do you handle this? And I got so much reassurance that, yes, this was indeed the illness, and yes, this is par for the course, and yes, I do know what I'm doing. And that was all it took for me, is having that. It was like somebody wrapped their arms around me and let me breathe for a minute.
Like a great big hug and a feeling of validation.
Exactly.
That was one of the biggest things for me.
Yep.
Well, how did you see this book as a tool for caregivers?
Well, because each day I give them just a small little tip of something to remember about the illness, whether it's something intimate by sexuality, or whether it's something simple like knowing CPR and the Heimlich maneuver. It's just something that they can refer to if they're going through some tragic times or some crises. They can look it up and go, oh, okay, this is okay. And they can use it as validation for themselves.
And also as advice about what to do in some of these situations.
Exactly. Just to know they're not alone.
And that's huge. Knowing that you're
very
not alone.
Huge.
That's, yeah. One of the things that I love about the book is that you don't have to read an entire book or an entire article to get the meat of the content. You know, you've
exactly.
got the short snippets every day that just cuts right to the chase. And so it's something, I mean, caregivers are so busy taking care of everything and everybody that a lot of times they don't have time to just sit down and do a leisurely read. So with something like this, it's a quick read.
Exactly. Almost like a caregiver's devotional.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was raised in the Methodist Church, and there's a little publication that comes out monthly called The Upper Room. And it's the same kind of format. You know, it has a thought for the day. And it's
exactly.
a page. And, you know, you can get through that, and it's enough to sustain you. And that's kind of how I see your book. It's enough to sustain you every day. And it's part of Help for HD's campaign for Awareness Month. Our campaign is I Fight For. And, you know, whether we're fighting for research or clinical trials or FDA approval or fighting for a cure or fighting for a husband, a son, a daughter, a mother, a sibling, or in this case, fighting for understanding. And you're really fighting for caregivers.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's just so important. What's been
it
your
is.
Biggest challenge as a caregiver?
There's actually a couple of things. I would say balance. Being able to balance and maintain my own identity and yet be able to do a good job with taking care of Nana and taking care of my ex-husband, and also learning how to set boundaries and handle aggression and know that maybe I'm not going to be perfect every day, but if I give myself balance, if I let myself have some rest, if I let myself not respond emotionally to the aggression, I think that was always my biggest challenge with it, is balancing normal with abnormal.
I think that's a huge challenge for people in general.
It
one
is.
One of the things you're talking about is handling the aggression.
Yep.
Because I think the human response is we want to defend ourselves.
We do. And, you know, I feel myself
different.
Because we have to know they're sick. Because I think we have to, there comes a point in the disease where you have to just step back and say, okay, this person's sick, I'm not, and you'll make the situation worse if you respond emotionally. And that's not good for them or you.
Right. I know so many times I hear and I use the mantra, it's the disease. It's the disease talking.
Exactly.
It's not the... And that's a big challenge.
It is, especially for people who have been married for a really long time. Maybe they knew each other as children. Because you're so emotionally attached to that person and you've known them and they've differently in the past, and so you keep trying to get that kind of response, and that's not going to happen as the illness progresses.
Can you reason with someone who is having psychological and cognitive problems, symptoms of the disease?
No, you cannot. The center of the brain that controls logic and reason, the executive function, is gone. It's been destroyed, and they're not capable of it. They are physiologically not capable of it.
And so what do you do? If you can't reason with them, what do you do?
Well, what you do is you validate their feelings and you try to dissipate the situation. You can either, you know, validate, I understand that you're angry, and then sometimes just walking away and saying, I will talk to you when we've both calmed down. Sometimes that's helpful. Diverting their attention the way you would with a toddler. Pardon?
I said that's exactly what it's like.
Yes. But validation goes a long ways. I have learned that when my loved one with HD, who is a very aggressive one, is in his fit where he can't reason, if I validate him or if I just say, I understand that would make... why that would make you angry. Later I can talk to him about it if he's calmed down. And sometimes you think that they're actually understanding and they don't. So you have to treat it the way you would a toddler. We don't give toddlers an audience when they're having a fit. And we don't let them get away with it either.
And that's a difficult balance.
It is. And it's very hard not to get emotionally involved yourself.
So how do you set boundaries?
Just the same way you would with a toddler. I will say, I'm not going to talk to you while you're speaking to me that way. Sometimes I say, I will call you back later when you've calmed down, or I will leave the situation. Sometimes I'll joke about the situation, and sometimes humor goes a long ways. Like I'll say, you know, something funny that will grab his attention away from it. So those are the things that I do. But setting boundaries, and for me, I had to actually not live in the same household with my aggressive HD person because it was dangerous. So that was a way I set boundaries too.
I understand that. I had to do the same thing. And I learned that I also was going to Al-Anon at the time because my loved one had an alcohol abuse problem, and the alcohol fueled aggression. And I learned in Al-Anon to detach. And sometimes I found that I couldn't be in the same place and emotionally detach. But if I left and went somewhere else for a little while, then I could detach.
Exactly.
And I think that served me well with dealing with Huntington's as well as dealing with alcoholism.
Exactly. And you know what? That's a really good point. And that's something I do want to point out to caregivers is alcohol and drugs can be ways of self-medicating the psychological issues. And so the problem and the aggression can become tenfold. And that is something I do encourage other caregivers to either read an Al-Anon book or something along codependency, things like that too, because it makes the situation 10 times worse if they're drunk and they have HD or they're high and they have HD. It's going to make it 10 times worse.
Yeah, those things don't mix well, do they?
No, and a lot of them do rely on amphetamines to try to stay awake or keep their energy levels up. And that is a problem in our community that people don't talk about a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's another of those taboo subjects. That and sexuality, I think, are probably the two that people really have problems with but don't talk about.
And the sexuality can be a very hurtful situation because it can be lack of it or it can be promiscuity, and it can cause very painful situations within a household.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you could give just one piece of advice to other caregivers, what would it be?
Reach for help. Don't be ashamed to say you need help, whether that means reading, joining a support group, going away for respite, asking someone at your church or in your neighborhood, reaching out to family. But that's what I would say. Reach for help.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't live near any kind of HD center or social worker, so that can become extra important of identifying where some resources are and reaching out to them.
Exactly. The online support groups, I can't stress enough how important those are. I have made some of my dearest friends through the support groups. And, I mean, there are three people in particular that I have been speaking to since my youngest child was 4. We met in a chat room on the internet called Huntington's the Monster. And I have been friends with these three people all these years, and I depend on them, and I can reach for help. And likewise, they can depend on me for help.
Is that chat room still in existence?
I don't think so. I think we all migrated into other online support groups through Facebook.
Yeah. I know chat rooms used to be the big thing, but with the evolution of Facebook, I'm not so sure chat rooms are still, I'm not sure they're still around. I don't really know.
I don't think they are. That's how old I am.
Well, me too. Yeah. Times change, and we have to change with them.
Yes, we do.
Please tell our listeners how they can order a copy of I Fight for Understanding.
Okay. Well, the first way is they can go to CreateSpace at www.CREATE, make sure you put that E in there, SPACE.com/711258. or they can go on Amazon and they can search for I Fight for Understanding, and it'll bring both the Kindle version and the paperback version up of the book.
Okay, wonderful. Again, that website for CreateSpace is www.createspace, written as one word, .com/7113258. And we also have that link up on the show page. So if you pull up this show in the archives, the description underneath the show will have that website on it. And then for Amazon, you just type in I Fight for Understanding, and it'll bring up the Kindle and the paperback. You can get it, either of those. So, Genevieve, are there any last thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yes, I would. I would like to just tell all the caregivers out there, you're doing a good job. You're doing a very unselfish job. And don't expect every day to be perfect. You're going to have days where you do make mistakes or you get overwhelmed. And I just want to thank you, because it's our caregivers who are really advocating and they're getting things done. And they're adding to the money that helps with research, and they're helping each other. And I just want to say thank you for that.
Yeah. I think what you said is real important, that caregivers recognize what an amazing thing that they are doing, because sometimes caregivers just feel so beaten down by the day-to-day problems that it's important to recognize the good part of it too. So anything else you'd like to share?
No, but I do want to thank you, Ms. Sharon, because you're an integral part of this community, and this book wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for you, and I want everyone out there to know how much I love you and what a good job you're doing for all of us.
Well, thank you. I love you, too, and this book truly would not exist without you. You're the one that came up with 31 days filled with very insightful tips for caregivers. And without that, there wouldn't be a book.
Well, thank you. It's my mission.
Yes, I know it is. I know it is. And you are doing a fabulous job of it. Thank you so much for being with us today. I know that people are excited about reading your book. I've heard people talking about it on Facebook, and there's been quite a buzz about it. And I hope they'll take the time to review it. Even if you buy the book on CreateSpace, you can go on Amazon and write a review of the book. And that's always useful for other people who are searching for information, for resources. And it's important to know, too, that all net proceeds from this book go to Help for HD International's Family Relief Fund. Genevieve and I had actually talked about establishing something to help people with IVF, with in vitro fertilization, the pre-genetic diagnosis, in vitro fertilization. But we decided that was so expensive that we probably couldn't make enough to make a difference with that. So it is going to the Family Relief Fund, and that fund is used to help people with crisis situations, not being able to make a mortgage payment or a utility payment. Last year we helped families buy Thanksgiving dinners and put gifts under the tree for Christmas. We've bought weighted blankets for kids with GHD. So a lot of good comes out of this fund, and thank you so much for helping us to build that relief fund. Thank you again so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Sharon, and I will talk to you later.
Okay. All right. Now to the headline news. This May 18th, which is, 8 days from today's show, everyone in the HD-JHD community is invited to be a part of a moment of history as Pope Francis welcomes to the Vatican the largest global gathering ever of the Huntington's disease community. This will mark the first time in history that a world leader has recognized the HD community. Charles Sabin, who is an NBC reporter who has Huntington's disease, organized this, put this together. And there is a website. Anyone can register for the event. It's pronounced Hidden No More, and it's spelled HD, that's capital H, capital D, then DENNOMORE, so HDDenNoMore.com. You can register for the event at that site. There's also a section on the website called Get Involved, because, of course, a lot of people who would love to be involved can't possibly travel all the way to Italy, to the Vatican. So there are ways that people who can't actually be at the event can get involved. And the portion of the website called Get Involved includes an action kit, videos, facts, statistics, graphics, and more that you can share with others as we continue this fight for global understanding of the horrific disease that impacts our lives daily. Secondly, I would like to let you know that Help for HD's third hype, Highly Interactive Participant Education Day, will be on Saturday, June 3rd at the Embassy Suites in Centennial Olympic Park in Atlanta, Georgia. Registration begins at 8:30 in the morning, and the event runs from 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. Registration, breakfast, lunch, and an afternoon dessert bar are all free. To register, you go to www.research.net/R/HIPE_Atlanta. Again, that's www.research.net/R/HIPE_Atlanta with a capital A. And the deadline for registration is May 28th, and that's so that we can order breakfast and lunch and the dessert bar and how many seats we need to have and so forth, so on. Please be sure to tune in at the same time next week. Katie Jackson will be interviewing Stacy Sargent. She is an incredible JHD warrior mom, and she is also hosting our Atlanta Education Day. So please be sure to tune in to hear that program. And as always, thank you for listening. We want to remind you also that all of our shows are available in the archives. If you go to blogtalkradio.com/helpforhd, you can listen to any of our past shows. They are also available for free in iTunes. Please pass the word along, and thank you for listening. And thanks again to Genevieve Patch, who is our very special guest today.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next time. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.